Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello and welcome back to an extremely positive edition of the Warriors All 82 podcast. And when I think positive, I think Tim Kawakami.
That is me. So, my rep. That's me. You got me.
Sent out the bat signal. It was a... it's been weeks, but really particularly over the last few games of this idea of losing while not developing, right? That was the theme of our podcast that dropped yesterday, the Warriors Plus Minus with Daniel LaRue. This was... the rare night this season, the Warriors hope a typical night coming up of winning and developing. Amazing. The needle they've attempted to thread this season and mostly haven't been able to do it, but you chase down a win, and we can get to the ways that Steve Kerr did chase down a win. And, you know, Wiseman doesn't close the final 8 minutes, but this is a very positive James Wiseman night. So really you get best of both worlds after what has been worst of both worlds.
Yeah, obviously, you know, you did talk about threading the needle, but it's hard to do it every time, and they haven't done it for a lot of times, but I don't think it's that hard. I mean, we might have a discussion about this with other people, but, you know, the number one thing is to get your young guys in the game. If you lose with the young guys in the game, you lose with the young guys in the game. If you don't get them in the game and you lose, it's the worst possible situation. So, you know, if you don't play them and you win, that's fine. But they're not winning a ton of games, and I think the young guys do help. So maybe they'll say, hey, look, we got Wiseman and Poole to this place where they can help us. You know, they can help us in the first quarter, they can help us in the second quarter, they can help us in the fourth quarter. I would argue that I think maybe that they could have gone to this earlier, specifically with Wiseman. Maybe Steve Kerr doesn't love that discussion too much, as was evident tonight, but that's okay. I just think that was out there. I think this sort of thing, maybe not a win every time, but this sort of play where you can go, wow, there's some things happening here, was kind of evident early in the season, and they kind of went away for a lot of different reasons. And Poole wasn't ready, you know, until after the All-Star break. But I think something like this is what you go, okay, this is a team that has pushing it forward and understands a larger picture and also won a game. And that always helps too.
Yeah, Wiseman doesn't play the final 8 minutes, but he plays 25 minutes. Yep. 25 minutes seems like the number, exactly. Right? You know, I don't think he's ready necessarily for 30, but 18 the other night, including, you know, I think, none of the final 14 minutes of either half. Yeah. You can't do that.
And they went small for a purpose, and you could see why. I mean, they, you know, it does help to speed up Brook Lopez. It does help.
I would say it like this. Let's say they don't win. Let's say Oubre misses both free throws or whatever. They just don't come back at the end. They lose by 6 to the Bucks, which it seemed like they were going to. I don't think we're coming on the podcast tonight criticizing.
Nope.
Anything that led up to the loss, like we were in the Atlanta loss, like that would have been, now it would have been a deflating loss for them because they really wanted it, but it wouldn't have been like a mistake filled loss. I liked the way they played. I liked his substitution patterns. Obviously, you know, Curry told him he was feeling good early in the game. The tailbone's feeling better, although it didn't look like it on a fourth quarter fall. And they have two off days coming up, so that's why they chose to extend the minutes too. And, you know, it sounds so minimal, but as we've talked about all season, you know, this is a one-point win. And in that, you know, between the eight-minute mark when he re-entered them, Curry, and they were down 9, to the six-minute mark, which is when he would usually come in, the Warriors scored on 5 consecutive possessions, and they cut the lead down to 5.
Yep.
Like, you know, you win the game because Kelly Oubre did what he did in the final 4 minutes, but you also kind of don't lose the game in those two extra Curry minutes. And it worked tonight.
By the way, can they put like yoga mats at the end of the baseline or something? Because they're going to drive every Warriors fan crazy watching Curry spill down there. And he really grimaced in pain this time. No question. I mean, that was like a wince for everybody. who just likes to watch basketball or just has ever had a tailbone that's hurt before. But I think this is going to recur. This is something he's just going to get through. Obviously, I don't think he missed after that either. Steph was obviously incredible tonight, and the extra minutes were huge, and getting the rotation nailed down was big, and, you know, getting Bazemore in there at the end was big, and getting a couple buckets from Jordan Poole when he gave him a couple buckets was big, and Wiggins, you know, gets a dunk at the end and clanks a three, but then gets a block on the, you know, on the last possession. You need all those things to happen. By the way, no Giannis. We have to point that out. No Giannis.
I did see an Antetokounmpo out there. Yeah. He was actually playing pretty well.
He scored some buckets too. Yeah, it was a little tricky for the Warriors. But I just the general point is, I think, as we've been talking about, is it had a sensibility to it. Even Middleton hits that shot, Warriors lose. We're talking right now saying, okay, yeah, they played a lot better. A lot of things made sense. The young guys look like they're growing. Sometimes they don't, sometimes they do, but you see a general progression. Steph was great. You could just see how that fits together when you're looking at next season, when you're trying to piece this together. So I think that's our major thing, is like, what's the overview? What happened tonight? They should all piece together. It shouldn't be two totally separate things. Like, oh, they lost tonight and has nothing to do with the progress. So that can't be the discussion here. And they got the win and they got the progress. And I think they can keep doing it. I mean, they're going to have clunkers, and Wiseman's going to have a clunker. And sometimes you'll go, why is he even playing? But I think they just have to play him. I got the number of games left wrong in my column, by the way. I just tried to do round numbers, so there's 20 left. There was 22 left before tonight. Now there's 21 left. Just play him. Just put them out there and see what happens. And I think it will get better and better. I know there's been a lot of criticism of him. I tend not to criticize him as much as others. I do see him getting better. The stats don't always say so, and certainly not the plus minus stats. He was minus -7 tonight just because they just got hammered to start the third quarter. But I think he generally was a plus. But I mean, I just see these little things being put together, and he's a number two overall pick. There's a massive amount of talent. It matters. That's why we talk about it every day. That's why every game is some sort of measurement about James Wiseman. And Kerr knows this. He doesn't love it, but he understands it. He does it himself. He just didn't, love it this way.
Well, they become pretty protective of Wiseman, too. Yep. I mean, and of the pressure being heaped on him, which, whatever, it's fine.
Yep.
But as you mentioned, this will continue to be discussed because a lot of their next decade hinges on him and what they do with him, how they develop him, if they ever decide to trade him, if they don't decide to trade him, how good can he become, how quickly. Tonight, Marcus talks about it plenty with young guys, this idea that instead of really zeroing in on what they don't do well with young guys in particular, find out what they do well when they do show those flashes. And it's what we would talk about with Jordan Poole last year. Like, well, you see some skills, you see some different stuff, even though he's like a complete negative on the court, you can see something in there. And that's tonight was, I saw it from Wiseman, like we were seeing it early in the season, like we hadn't been seeing lately. It was the flash plays. And it's not just like that guy might look like a superstar, but tonight in the first half, that is the type of 20-year-old center who can help a win right now. I'm not saying like he's about to play 10 straight games and every game he's going to be a winning component, but the energy, the just relentless attacking of the glass. Like, he's 7'1", he's enormous, he has long arms. If he just had 10 often or 10 rebounds in the first half, like that's it. That's winning impact. Steph Curry singled out a couple plays post game. It was the chase down block, but right after he has the block, I think it was Draymond, somebody threw the ball away in semi-transition, and the Bucks are coming back and they get kind of like a swing to DiVincenzo in the corner. Mm-hmm. And DiVincenzo's open, solid shooter in the corner. You don't want that shot. And Wiseman's sitting in the paint, but he's so huge. He races out to the corner with just a 1-2 step arm up, and DiVincenzo kind of freaks out, tries to drive, travels.
Yep.
And it's like, if you just use the 7'1" and the mobility that he has, you can just cause offensive players to do screwy things and boom, turnover. Like, you just save 3 points potentially right there. And it doesn't have to be, the smartest, you know, defense from end to end. It's just like, use that. And tonight you just saw in ways that it can be used positively. And there was less of the, I want to be Giannis, so let me try this mid-post isolation spin. Oh, I bumbled it away because Brook Lopez. Yeah. And Kent Bazemore had a quote post-game too. He's like, we knew he's just way faster than Brook Lopez. Mm-hmm. And they use that too.
Yeah, and what do I keep saying? You know, so you if you're upset with him and you want to limit his minutes, so you up Kevon Looney's minutes? You know, it's I would even say if you had Marquese Chris, okay, so give Marquese Chris 12 minutes. And keep Looney at 18. You know, the idea that in order to make sure you're really, really good, you play Kevon Looney 26 instead of 20 minutes. That's the part where I don't see the constructiveness in this. And I get, like, okay, he's got to learn his lessons. He's got to earn things. 100% understand that. But as I wrote, you know, in the column that ran today, it's like, the Warriors have to earn something here too, right? They have to earn the ability to know what they're doing with this guy and understand that this is a valuable, valuable commodity. This is something you don't get once every 20 years. When's the last time they had a center like this? You know, Robert Parrish, it's just not what you get often if you're a good team. And there's some responsibility not to mess around with it too much. And I'm not saying they haven't. I'm saying it's borderline with what they're, you know, with how this has been
going. Well, you know what was the way they played him, or, you know, like the idea that he was going to fit in and be like Andrew Bogut.
Yep.
And you're already starting to see it. I retweeted Kevin O'Connor, so let me find it. The Warriors ran, per him, per Second Spectrum, he says the Warriors ran 71 pick and rolls tonight, which was they tied a season high. And, you know, a lot of that was high screens with James Wiseman. They simplified what he's doing. How many times did you just see him in a set tonight? And, you know, usually you see him, like, running out to the perimeter, and he's off ball. Like, should I screen you? Oh, should I screen you? Oh, I'm catching it. Oh, I'm supposed to do a dribble handoff. Tonight it was like, I'm running over to the ball because Steph Curry has it. I'm setting a screen. I'm rolling. And if he wasn't doing that, he was mostly staying out of the fray and then attacking the offensive glass. Yep. That's all he should do. High screens, or you're in the dunker spot and you're just kind of being physical, coming in, try to tip a ball, get an offensive rebound. Boom, that's all you're doing. And he did it with Poole too, yep, which I really liked. I know you had advocated in your recent article. I've been saying for months now that it should be some more Poole. Like, those are two of their three most talented offensive players. Now, Wiseman isn't where he will be offensively, but if we're just talking pure talent, like, are they 2-3 right now? On this thing?
You know, I mean, Wiggins is in there when Wiggins can shoot.
Yeah, yeah. Because Wiggins is more polished, yes, product. Yes. But I think, like, if we, at the end of all of the careers of the players on this team, I would guess, you know, we would consider Wiseman, I don't know about Poole. We'll see where Poole's going. Yeah. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And we saw it tonight, and I think, you know, three of their biggest buckets of the night are like Poole Wiseman action in quieter pockets of the game where you just need to kind of survive, and they got points from it.
It's finding points. It's searching for points. And we know this team has struggled, has just kind of tossed the ball around the perimeter sometimes and not really anybody who can attack. Sometimes the attacking is messy, and sometimes it's not great, but you got to have somebody who's willing to do it. And Poole's willing to do it. And, you know, three-point shot's not on right now, but that little runner thing is a great NBA shot. I mean, it's a Lou Williams shot. Not many people have it, and he made, like, three of them, and you really needed to do it against the Bucks tonight. So, yeah, those two guys mean something for this team long-term. They absolutely do. The more time you can get with them, I mean, and Kerr went to Wiseman, the second unit, briefly in the fourth quarter. I understand why, because it was time to go to just go Draymond at center. I totally understand. I mean, it's hard to argue to just put Draymond in there and go run Brook Lopez. But you saw a little bit of it, and I think there will be more of it. And I think it's good for Wiseman to get minutes with both the first unit and the second unit, because it's different setups, so he can think differently and maybe let it go a little bit more in that second unit offensively, but maintain the defensive discipline and make sure these just discipline offensively, especially with that first unit, and just run the court and see what happens. I just think, again, we're saying all this after a good Wiseman night. I will say the exact same thing, and I'm sure you will too, after bad Wiseman nights too, is just get him out there and try to make sure the bad nights don't come as often, and the good nights come more often. And that the only way you're going to be able to do that is to keep doing, is to keep playing them. I think the worst thing that can happen for this team is they get to this offseason and they don't know about Wiseman. They just don't know. And there's a lot of, you know, the COVID and the injury and didn't have training camp. I get all that. Those are real things. But you've got, you know, you got a bunch of games now where you can still do it. You can still get through this 20 games, 21 games left, possibly into the playoffs, and get come out of this thing. Okay, this is what we know we got out of this guy. This is what we know. Might be great, might be middling, might be bad. But you got to know this. You can't not know it at the end of the season. That's my opinion. And I think tonight was a fine example of getting to know him. And by the way, he helps you win a game. Those are two pretty good things.
I'm Trey Wingo. And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
I think we should spend a segment on Kelly Oubre. Yep. You know, we've spent weeks now on his fit with the franchise, his future, his, you know, the summer ahead. Should they or should they not have traded him? Another slump that he had kind of dipped himself into after a good January. I thought he was the key. You know, Steph Curry's the player of the game, 41 points on 21 shots, which we can get to.
Against double teams, against, you know, yeah, all that stuff.
Drew Holiday, oh, you know, who's a great defender.
Great player.
But Oubre, it's hustle plays most of the game. It's solid defense, but it's what he did in the final 4 minutes. Drew Holiday hit two, just I thought were daggers. He hits the first one, I think, to go up 10 with about 4 minutes left, and it just that felt over. Then Oubre answers with the three, and you felt like, okay, that's a breath of life. And then Holiday comes back and daggers that, and it was like, oh, all right, never mind. He brought it right back to 10. It really feels over. And then Oubre answers right back with a three to bring it back to 7, and then they make their climb, the quick climb. And to me, like, that was the sequence of the game, to just quickly answer those threes with threes by Oubre. You know, and those are we kill his confidence sometimes, his tunnel vision, but, you know, he thinks he's making that shot, even if the audience doesn't necessarily think he is.
You got to believe it to take it. And I give him credit. I was going to say, you know, in the past, Warriors have a bunch of secondary players who felt the weight of playing with Curry, and they didn't want to shoot if Curry was on the floor, and Durant and Clay, but it was really Curry. And now the Warriors have a bunch of guys who don't seem to really care. And sometimes he's on the court, and they're not even looking for him, and they're going to get their own. And I think that's preferable at this point, because Steph will find it. Steph will, you know, he's not going to worry about Steph getting the ball at some point. Steph will go get it himself. You want to have players who have the guts to take that shot and take it and take it again and take it again. And even with Wiggins clunker, at least he took it. Like, you know, we've covered a lot of people, a lot of Warriors players who would not take that shot. So I give Wiggins.
And then Oubre gets the offensive rebound, forces the foul, and hits both free throws. Both free throws, you know, drizzled in after nailing the rim.
I thought the first one missed, like, frankly. Like, why do they look like it missed? It looked like it missed. Two of the bigger free throws in recent Warriors regular season history. I mean, comparable to, as you know, which ones we always compare huge free throws to at the end of a game.
I don't know if they were that.
No, they weren't that big. But I'm saying, you know, hey, two free throws, one to tie, one to win. Those are huge free throws.
Damian Lee did that early in the season. Remember, Damian Lee hit the game winning three against Chicago, and then two big free throws.
I have to say, but yes. Yeah, it's just, if it's Steph, you go out, whatever, he's going to make them. Anybody else, they're big free throws, and when that determine whether you win or lose the game, those are big free throws. Obviously, the defensive stand. No, Oubre was huge in a very important time, and you know, hey, Jrue Holiday cooked everybody, but I thought Oubre gave him a run. I thought Wiggins might have been less good on Middleton, but you know, Middleton's tough defense. I mean, that guy's tough to defend. I'm not going to rip Wiggins. I just don't think he was great on him. But it does, you know, what do they keep saying? It's important to have those two guys so you can throw them at them, because they had Curry and Poole out there for a little bit. I think, you know, Steve was thinking about closing with them, and he had to get Poole out of there for Bazemore because the guards were wide open when they run any kind of action with Steph and Jordan Poole, and it just wasn't going to work. So they get Bazemore in there. He's a little clunkier. Holiday scored over him a little bit too, but he's a, you know, guess who got the second deflection on the last possession? Wiggins got the first one. Bazemore got the second one. You know, just long wings who are tough and have the ability to reach in there a little bit, sometimes foul too much, but that those are important. Those are important players that they did not have last season and had obviously all throughout the dynasty. And if the Warriors lose some of these guys, and Oubre being one of them, they're going to need others to replace them. Absolutely, 100%. So who's going to guard Damian Lillard? Who's going to guard the other great point guards? Who's going to guard these kind of guys that Klay Thompson has taken the assignment for so many years, and you just may not want to have Klay take that assignment, at least to start the season? Kelly Oubre, and if you can, and Oubre can turn around and hit some big threes, that's value, man. That is true value.
As the as the king of the Kent Bazemore bandwagon, you had to appreciate that. Like I thought he was important tonight. He had, I think, like three first half threes. Yep. You know, yep. Like, no, just he'd flung a few.
He'd been way off that, from three, obviously. Yeah. I'm just like alerted to this that so many Warriors fans just hate the guy, and I get some of it. He kicks the ball away, he fouls too much, he does some weird things. Even tonight, he did a handoff pass to.
He's just become the face of the fouls.
The face of the fouls because, and kind of the scattered play. But, man, he's like now he's second in overall plus minus to Steph. No one else is close. And there's a reason. Again, you just look at this. If you see a ball get deflected in there and he's in the game, he's the one who got the ball deflected. If you know, he'll attack the rim, sometimes not always successfully, but you still got to do it. Like, someone's got to do it. If Steph's getting double teamed, somebody has to attack. Somebody has to be willing to take that shot. And it's you know, it's in those, like, I'll take the guy who will take the shot. You don't have to. Chris Mullin says that all the time. Give me the guy who'll take the shot. He's not going to make it every time. Give me the guy who'll take the shot. And Bazemore does that on a lot of different levels. And I don't love his game, but I'll take it. I'll take it because you need someone out there who's going to bump into somebody and go guard somebody, make their lives tough on one side, and maybe, you know, make a couple buckets on the other side, get a rebound, get a deflection. And just this, you know, he's become the guy that Warriors fans cannot stand, and I don't get that part. So I'm going to react to that saying, you guys think he's so terrible. You complain about everything he does, and he's the one in the game at the end, and there's a deflection that he got. And the ball finds him. He's not running away from the ball, I'll tell you that. Maybe he should sometimes. I talk about value. There is great value in a player like that. Sometimes you don't want to play him 26 minutes. You want to play him 18. But when you need him, he will be there in 26 minutes, and he's going to do some things for you. And he did some things tonight.
So this is the Warriors' moment. I think late in the season, this is their chance. They've talked about a run. They want to kind of rewrite the story on what's been a disappointing season to this point, particularly because of what's happened in the last month. You get the uplifting win, this late comeback win, which includes the nice James Wiseman performance. If you can build on that coming up, and if you look at the schedule, you got two off days, which will be a good practice planted in between that, and then Wizards Rockets, two very winnable home games. Then Denver, tough, but then you go on the road. It's a long road trip. I think a 5-game road trip, but it starts at Oklahoma City at Cleveland. That's two tanking teams, two teams who have no interest, at least franchises who have no interest in winning. That should be at least 4-1. And then you're talking about the 5-1 stretch, because I'm including this Bucks win now, a 5-1 stretch that has eluded them all season, right? That's been their big problem. They haven't been able to go 5-1 over a 6-game stretch. Well, you should win 4 of these next 5 games. Like, and if you're going to go on this run, like, it's kind of got to be now. Nobody around, like, the Spurs are 2-8 in their last 10. They're kind of crumbling a little bit. The Pelicans, they lost again tonight in Atlanta. Like, yeah, they're close to the Warriors in the standings, I think 1.5 back, but, you know, they're not rising too quick. Same with the Kings. Like, you know, the Warriors could get up to if they go 5-1 in the next 6, like, they could be sitting there knocking on the door of 8. Is that great? No, but it'd feel a lot different. They'd feel at least like a sure play-in game. And then beyond that, 2 more Thunder games later in the season, 3 Pelicans games, a lot of winnable games down the line. It's there for them, but they're going to have to play the style they played tonight and play with the energy they played tonight and at least semi-regularly get what they got out of Wiseman tonight.
One thing we've seen out of this team is they mostly have beaten the bad teams, right? I mean, they've had some clunkers, but I can't remember when they've lost to it. Was there, have they lost to a bad team? Maybe the Kings they lost to? I can't even remember now. But
I mean, the Raptors, they had no Curry. The Raptors aren't a good team, and they were up 61.
Yeah, they're the the Raptors they won a championship 2 seasons ago with a lot of those same players. I don't really count that one. I think the Warriors do well against bad teams. I just think they're fit to do well against them. We shall see. Maybe they'll collapse. Maybe they'll be, you know, Steph will miss some time. Who knows? We don't know. A lot of things could happen, but I want to see them against some better teams. That isn't going to happen right away, but they've got some other teams, you know, some tougher teams coming up at some point. I want to see how that looks. But yeah, if they go 5-1, you know, maybe 4-2 in there. Who knows? 5-1, let's say. Yeah, they're going to be sitting in the 8th seed at some point because this is not a race full of, you know, brimming champions. This is not. We've named the teams. You know, Dallas is unreachable. I think at 7, they're not getting there. So
yeah, the disappointment for them is that the avoidance of the play-in seems impossible at this point. You know, they can't get up to 6, yeah. And that's where they should have targeted all season. That's where I think anyone rationally was saying, like, get to 6, and they should be in that conversation, and they're not. But I also don't think they're about to stumble down to 11-12,
no.
Which in recent weeks has seemed like a possibility. But I just, you know, you look at the path forward and you hear the way they, like, do still sound motivated, particularly Steph seems motivated. And that's all that really matters. I mean, like, he pushed for that win tonight.
Yep.
He pushed himself to those extra 2 minutes. He scored 41, you know, on 21 shots, and he's fighting through the tailbone issue. He came back probably sooner than he should have. So if he seems as motivated as he is, and I see some of the teams on the schedule coming up and some of the teams around them in the standings, I'm predicting definitely they're in the play-in bracket at least.
And I just never thought 5-6 was all that reachable for them. It depends on what everyone else does.
When they were 19-15.
But that was also when Dallas wasn't, you know, like, it depended on the other teams too. And if anybody took off who was just better than them, they were not going to be able to follow that team. And Dallas is the team that's played much better. So yeah, could they have? Yes. I'm just saying in an equal world where we're thinking there's 6 good teams in the West, the Warriors were not going to be one of them. I just didn't think that. So that makes 7, 8, 9, you know, where I figured again, and the teams around them have been crappier than I would have thought too. So, New Orleans being the number one candidate for that. I mean, you figured they would be a 500 team and they're not a 500 team. But that's the way this goes. You know, you fall where you fall. And I think, you know, whatever they say about a play-in game, they'll take it at this point. They will take it. And I've been the practical person saying, actually, maybe the best thing for them is to have meaningful games, get to play on game, and then lose. And then don't make the playoffs. And because you know what? Then you're in the lottery. And then you get another shot at the bonus. You might not get there. You might end up with 14. Who cares? But I'll take 2% chance more that I get Cade Cunningham. I'll take 1.3% chance more that I get a shot at Jalen Suggs. I understand you want to win as many as you can. I'm just saying if this rolls out where they're 9 and they lose the play-in game and they don't even get a home game maybe, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. I really don't. And I guess they would get a play, right? 9 would host 10. But
Yeah, yeah. 9 would host 10. And then, I mean, the big thing is you want to get into the first round.
But I don't think it's that big a deal. I really, so they get slaughtered by, you know, the one seed or whatever it is. I don't know. I mean, again, I understand the value of that in some ways, but I think if they could just say, hey, we fought our way through all this. We got to the postseason, quote unquote, in the play-in game. Don't embarrass yourself in that game. Do you want to lose to Sacramento in the play-in game? No, they probably wouldn't want to do that. But not making the playoffs yet, being able to play after the regular season isn't a terrible thing. You get yourself in that lottery and you see where you are. I'm just saying, from a purely practical thing, would you say anything is more valuable than a 1.2% chance at Kate Cunningham? I don't think so. That's me.
Yeah, I mean, I just like Steph Curry's mood about it all.
But I just think you could say, hey, we kind of were in the playoffs, right? We kind of were. So I don't know that losing 4-0 to whoever, who's one going to be, Slater? I don't know.
Utah.
Okay.
Utah.
I don't think losing 4-0 to Utah is going to be the most fabulous.
Well, their realistic dream at this point, obviously a dream's title, but that's not happening. Realistic dream would be like, you know, get in the play-in, win, you know, get through the play-in, get a Utah or a Phoenix at 2, and steal one of the first two on the road, you know, then try to steal one of the next two at home, like get it to a 6th game or make them sweat, you know.
The way the Clippers did to them.
Losing six and have post-game press conferences where they feel like, you know, exit interviews, and instead of like, man, you guys need some soul searching this summer, and like, you know, what are you going to do? It's more like, man, like, you know, Wiseman had a decent series, and like, Steph, you look good, and like, you really pushed a good Utah team. Like, Clay on this team, you know, might, you know, who knows? Some would argue, hey, maybe it's better if they just realize they need to just completely revamp the roster this summer, so maybe making the playoffs is a better wake up call for the franchise.
They are not completely revamping their roster, though. So
No. I mean, it wouldn't be like a teardown. I mean, more just like a, you know, you say Wiseman and the pick. You know what? This sounds like a Warriors plus minus segment. So we are not doing that tonight. Warriors All 82 is wrapping up. It nice win for the Warriors. Now, like I said, Wizards Rockets back to back. I think they need to go 2-0. And we'll see if they do this season. If you said they need to go 2-0, it probably means they're going 1-1.
Yep. Some wacky thing will happen at the end of one of these games, but I think they'll probably go 2-0. I think they might kick away something a little bit later, but not those two.
The Wizards one is the more dangerous of the two.
Yep. And
you know, Westbrook's had some wild games recently.
And that Bradley Beal's pretty good. So, yeah, that could be one where we'll see where this top – are they still top five defense, which is still kind of laughable to me, but
I don't think anyone. I need to look, but no, I don't think so.
Top six defense when you lose by 107 to Toronto. But we'll see if that defense holds together. If they play decent defense, they should beat all these teams, right? All these teams. If the defense falls apart a little bit, then you're certainly, you know, going to be threatened. You certainly can be challenged. That's what beats terrible teams. Just play half-assed defense and then let Steph go. So we shall see where they are in a couple games.
All right. Talk to you all then.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.